get ready.
Man, I don't ever want to be so woke that me and the KKK are out here agreeing on the same shit. Before they were killing people to keep us from voting, now we talk ourselves out of the shit.
For real talk.
Before you get out here live wrong talking about minimum wages and starter jobs, educate yourself on why the minimum wage was created in the first damn place.
All the time.
You shouldn't be the same person you was 10 years ago. You should be growing towards a better you every day. And the only ones who will be threatened by that are the ones who refuse to grow and are scared their ass gonna get left behind.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Everybody, welcome to the Span Report podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span. This is episode number 258 of the report, and right now we're rocking out to some Snow Algebra, Situationship. Rock out with your boy. Saturday night here in the Span abode. We rocking out, like I said, to this Snow Algebra, man. This is some funky shit, man. I fucks with it real heavy. Been listening to this quite a bit, man, at the job, man. Real talk. Gotta kind of mellow out, man, because it's been a bullshit week at the job, man. Real talk. And I'm sure y'all all have been dealing with some bullshit. Probably not. Everybody ain't necessarily dealing with the bullshit. But for those of you who have, yo, man, sometimes you gotta chill out, man. This right here was kind of helping me mellow out somewhat while I was at the job, man. Real talk. Let me turn this down. As a matter of fact, let me turn that off. I said, let me turn it off. There we go. Yeah. But this is episode 258 of the Span Report podcast. And of course, as always, I'm your host, Mr. Span. And we gonna be doing some podcasting tonight. We gonna be talking some shit. We gonna talk about some politics and some real life newsy stuff and whatnot. You know, like we always do here at the Span Report podcast, man, real talk. But before, of course, we do all of that, I got to remind you guys how to get in touch with us over here at the Span Report podcast and let your voice be heard. You can go ahead and hit up that hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. Of course, we'll replay those messages here on the show and respond in kind. You can also email us here at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Go ahead, leave us those emails. And of course, those emails will get read here live on the show and reply to here on the show as well, man. Follow your boy Span on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. So go ahead and follow me there. Chop it up with your man Span throughout the week. Also, man, hit us up on our store. You can go to the store, get yourself some merch, man. Get yourself a coffee mug or like a water bottle or you know, a tank top or a t-shirt. You know, we got a bunch of stuff over there at the store. And the way that you get to the store is to go to www.thespanreport.com. You can go there and watch replays of the show and listen to the show over there. You can vote in the polls. You can leave comments there. You can donate to the show as often as you like, as much as you like. And, of course, we really do appreciate everybody who contributes over there at the Span Report Podcast Network through a couple of different means. We have our PayPal account, and you can also hit us up through our Patreon as in a more recurring donation sort of situation. So as a matter of fact, let me shout out our Patreon patrons this month here at the Span Report Podcast. Man, we got the homeboy Aaron B, who's coming in this month with his Patreon contribution. Thank you so much, brother. We also got the homeboy Dre, who's coming through with his Patreon contribution. Thank you so much, man. Jay Muddy is coming through with the Patreon contribution, man. We really do appreciate that. And Kimberly B is coming through chopping it up with us here at the Spirit Report Podcast Network, man, with that Patreon contribution. And we really do appreciate everybody who goes about the business of doing that. Those folks are the ones who allow for us to be able to do this show here live here on Crowdcast, man. So we really do appreciate everybody who does that. But there's also other ways that you can kind of contribute to the show. And it doesn't cost you a dime, just a couple minutes of your time. And you can go to iTunes and or Stitcher Radio. And you can go there and you can leave a review, a five-star review preferably. Those five-star reviews are the ones that get read here live on the show. We really do appreciate everybody who does that, because that's one way to help the show grow, man. It's spreading the word, letting everybody know why it is exactly why you're fucking with us over here at the Spirit Report Podcast Network. And it's kind of intimate, right? You'd be like, yo, man, I like this here. You might like this here, man. Go ahead and check it out. Because, you know, podcast listeners, man, one thing I know about podcast listeners, man, you got to be like in the know. You know, like people ain't just going to share you to you like everybody they listen to. They're like, you know, they got to vet you out first. So, yeah, man, really do appreciate everybody who does that, man. Real talk. But yeah, man, it's been an interesting week, to say the least. Right? You know, work wise and everything, man, just grinding, man. It's the dog days of summer. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like you know, when you're in Major League Baseball or whatever, it's like, you know, you might be like 37 and 42 in the season, but you still got like 100 games left to go. That's kind of how it feels, man. And at the job, man, just kind of like grinding it out, like looking forward to vacations and whatnot, man. Hoping, like, if you got like some off time coming up, man, take it. If you need those mental days, take it. I know damn well I wish I could take some mental days, man. But like, you know what? I don't want to fuck with these people today. But, you know, sometimes you got to get out there and get that money, man. Sometimes you got to get out there and get it. So, yeah, man, it's been like that. It's been like that. It's the dog days of these summer months, man. And we going out there just trying to grind it out, man. Real talk. But, yo, it's been a lot of things happening, man, news-wise, politics-wise and whatnot. And we're going to talk about that a lot here on the Spirit Report Podcast. And, of course, before we do that, let me just go ahead and get our sounds going, because we got to – wait a minute. Let me make sure, because I got some new shit popping off here. I had to get a new tablet. Let me make sure I got this boy plugged in before I start talking shit about the news. I think y'all can hear that. All right, that was coming in quite kind of low. But, yeah, man, we are in the news, man. And one of the first things I kind of wanted to talk about, there was a story that came up earlier this week, and I thought it was, like, crazy as shit, because it was crazy as shit. But apparently, there was a little boy here in Canton, Michigan, who was charged with assault after hitting another little boy in the face with a dodgeball while playing the game of dodgeball. Yeah, we're going to read this story here. This actually comes out of WXYZ.com. As a matter of fact, let me pull this up. This says 10-year-old boy. He's a 10-year-old boy. 10-year-old boy from Canton formally charged with assault after a schoolyard game. A 10-year-old boy from Canton Township has been charged as a juvenile after it was alleged he assaulted a 9-year-old classmate during a schoolyard game in April. Wayne County Prosecutor Kim Worthy announced the charges Tuesday. The 10-year-old is charged with aggravated assault. According to a release, the charge is a misdemeanor in adult court, but in the juvenile system, it is a wide discretion in fashioning a remedy that is in the best interest of the juvenile offender. On April 29, students at the Canton School were playing a game called Tips in the schoolyard with a rubber ball similar to a dodgeball. According to a release, the game doesn't involve throwing the ball at other players. Reports state that once the game was over, it is alleged that the 10-year-old took the ball and intentionally threw it with force, causing the 9-year-old to suffer a concussion and cuts to his face. The injured child's mother then made a complaint to local police. You went to the fucking police with some shit that had been going. You went to the police with some shit that was happening between some kids. Like 9 and 10 years old, you went to the cops. Okay. It says, the injured child's mother then went and made a complaint to the local police. The prosecutor's office said in a release that after a review of the evidence, the child was charged. In many juvenile cases, we are able to craft solutions prior to charging an offense. Worthy said, after charging, remedies can be anything from dismissal to providing needed services for the juvenile respondent to diversion programs and beyond. The juvenile will appear in court for the first time on Thursday, August 1st at 9 a.m. That boy's mama pressed charges because the kids were playing a game involving the ball. Now, I don't know if the kid, like, you know, they're saying after the game was over, the kid just took the ball, threw it at the kid and the other kid, and you know, he suffered a concussion, and it, truth be told, is very unfortunate that the kid suffered a concussion concerning the game that the kids were playing. But to go to the police and be like, yo, I want this kid charged, something needs to happen, I think that was a bit over the top. Now, of course, this is Canton Township. Canton is, let's be honest, is, well, for those of you who aren't familiar, Canton is a very white place in Michigan, right? And the little boy who was charged was a little black kid. So I don't want to, like, I kind of just don't want to downplay the fact that race may have been a factor in the reasoning why this kid may have been charged. Although the Wayne County prosecutor, Kim Worthy, here in Michigan, she is a black woman. So at any juncture, I still feel like because this happened in Wayne County, or because this happened in Canton, and the fact that this other kid's mom, the victim's mom, went straight to the police between a game being played by the kids, I just thought that was a little bit over the top. But apparently, there's an update, and the kid who was charged with assault, those charges was dismissed. All right, here's the update. As a matter of fact, I believe there's video attached to this. Let's see. Do I have the video? Let's check this out. I believe there's video attached to this. And we do. Let me pull this up so you guys here in the chat room can check this out right along with your boy. Let's pull that up. It's here. And here we go. Whoops, that's not it. That's not it. Here we go. Let me rewind this so you guys can get this from the very jump. All right.
The aggravated assault. He's accused of hitting a friend in the face in a dodgeball-style game on the school playground this spring. This case was first reported on Friday here on Action News, and it grew much larger, getting national attention. Jim Kirstner has the story in Detroit.
The mother of the 10-year-old who was charged said she just found out about those charges last week and that she had to be here in Detroit in juvenile court tomorrow. She says this is devastating.
To charge a child with aggravated assault who was playing a game is not okay.
Mother says both boys have been friends a year and a half. The incident happened in April on the playground of their elementary school in Canton during a dodgeball-style game. The other boy was hit in the head. He had an underlying health condition and ended up with a concussion. Now this mother says she and her son Bryce are being targeted because they are in a predominantly white area and will go to another school this fall.
And he doesn't even realize how much something like this is going to change his life forever.
Wayne County Prosecutor Kim Worthy issued a statement this morning dismissing the charges and denying it was done under pressure. I will never try our cases in the court of public opinion or outcry. Petition drives, protests, and other public so-called pressure certainly have their place in a democracy, but they should never impact what is done in a case and should not affect outcomes. Justice always should. The attorney for Bryce and his mother says this is not over.
I want Kim Worthy and the prosecutor's office to see the person that they had charged with aggravated assault. This is essentially a straight-A student who had never done anything wrong.
Last week, 7 Action News interviewed the mother of the injured boy. She didn't want to show her face. She declined to discuss the case today. 7 Action News confirmed she told police she did want the case prosecuted. But last week, she told us a different story.
I tried not to let it get to this point.
The attorney says this is not over. He wants a call to action, people to call Wayne County Prosecutor Kim Worthy to make sure that there are no other kids who've been charged like this, and their cases have not been in the news. In Detroit, Jim Kurtzner, 7 Action News.
Okay, this actually wasn't the story about whether or not the kid's story had been or his case had been dismissed. But, however, what we will do is go right to that because I know I got it. Here we go. I know. I got it. Okay. It's somewhere in here. Jesus Christ. Okay. So, where is it? There we go. Jesus. Trying to find it. Finally found it. There we go. Let's see.
A stunning reversal. A change of heart after prosecutors charged a 10-year-old with aggravated assault. He's accused of hitting a friend in the face in a dodgeball-style game on the school playground this spring. This case was first reported on Friday here on Action News, and it grew much larger, getting national attention. Jim Kirstner has the story in Detroit.
The mother of the 10-year-old who was charged said she just found out about those charges last week and that she...
Apparently this was it. Apparently that was it. But yeah, the kid who had the charges filed against him, they threw those charges out of the court. The prosecutor just declined to pursue it any further. But like I said, man, before we even went into all of this, it was just ridiculous that this even went this far, where a kid was being charged with aggravated assault between a game being played between 9 and 10-year-olds at the schoolyard. Man, that's just crazy. And that's in the news. Another story, man, that we got in the news that I kind of wanted to talk about was the fact that the Democratic presidential debates were happening here in Detroit. And, like I told y'all a month ago or so, this was back when Van Jones had did the state of something. I think it's like the state of the city or something like that I went to. State of Affairs, that's what it was. And I kind of talked to you guys about the fact that I kind of wanted to try to get out more into the city to kind of cover some of these types of events. And they had the Democratic the Democratic presidential debates here in Detroit. And I did submit for tickets to go to the debates. However, that lottery didn't fall in your man Span's favor. So your man Span didn't go. However, the debates happened. There was some highlights of those debates, and we're going to kind of talk a little bit about some of the highlights of those debates, man, because truth be told, like it happened over 2 nights. There were 20 candidates, and I know a lot of people are just like, yo, it's too many of these people, man. It's way too many of them. I'll start paying more attention when it's like less candidates being, when there's less candidates being, in the mix, you know what I'm saying? And so they had, like I said, 20 candidates over 2 nights, 10 and 10, and there were some highlights that were to be had. We're going to kind of highlight some of these highlights here on the Span Report. So one of the first things I kind of wanted to highlight was the fact that, like, Marianne Williamson, right? Marianne Williamson is kind of one of those, she's one of those what we would call fringe candidates. She's not really polling, really all that well. But she did have a couple moments where people were paying attention to Marianne Williamson. And one of the things that people were paying attention to when Marianne Williamson spoke during these Detroit debates was the fact that she talked about the Flint water crisis and what that meant for, not only the city, but for race relations, how the city and how the state, how the country is moving race related wise. And let me just pull this up so you guys can watch this here. But this is her talking about the Flint water crisis and whether or not this would happen in a more affluent area. Check this out, y'all.
Flint water crisis.
My response on the Flint water crisis is that Flint is just the tip of the iceberg. My response on the Flint water crisis is that Flint is just the tip of the iceberg. I was recently in Denmark, South Carolina, where there is a lot of talk about it being the next Flint. We have an administration that has gutted the Clean Water Act. We have communities, particularly communities of color and disadvantaged communities all over this country, who are suffering from environmental injustice. I assure you, I lived in Grosse Pointe. What happened in Flint would not have happened in Grosse Pointe. This is part of the dark underbelly of American society. The racism, the bigotry, and the entire conversation that we're having here tonight, if you think any of this wonkiness is going to deal with this dark psychic force of the collectivized hatred that this president is bringing up in this country, then I'm afraid that the Democrats are going to see some very dark days. We need to say it like it is. It's bigger than Flint. It's all over this country. It's particularly people of color. It's particularly people who do not have the money to fight back. And if the Democrats don't start saying it, then why would those people feel that they're there for us? And if those people don't feel it, they won't vote for us, and Donald Trump will win.
Thank you very much.
All right, so that was one of the highlights of Marianne Williamson when she was here in Detroit. Got a large applause when she talked about the fact that, you know, that what happened in Flint wouldn't happen in Grosse Pointe, which was a truthful statement, which was like, I think that was like here in Detroit, like, and it, because these particular debates were happening in Detroit, there is a certain resentment towards a lot of these suburban white communities surrounding the Detroit area. Because the ways in which you got to kind of go back into the history of like what's been going on in Detroit when it comes to the auto industry, how when black people moved in, a lot of the jobs that were associated with the auto industry started moving out to the suburbs, out in Oakland County, out in Macomb County. And although Grosse Pointe is in Wayne County, you know, there's a demarcation line when it comes to the Grosse Pointes. Like, you can tell the difference, like, where there's poor and where there's wealthy, and even the attitudes and how people approach certain things. Like, I've been working in Grosse Pointe the last like year and a half or so. Like, you can definitely tell the difference in how people react to certain things and how they expect certain things because of who they are and where they live. There's a different expectation there. And so, yeah, when she talked about what's going on in Grosse Pointe or what happened in Flint wouldn't happen in Grosse Pointe. Grosse Pointe is a much more affluent area. All of the Grosse Pointes, Grosse Pointe Farms, Grosse Pointe Shores, Grosse Pointe City, Grosse Pointe, like all of these Grosse Pointes, there's a whole bunch of different ones. But like when she talked about that, that's why it resonated so hard here in the Detroit area, because there's a lot of people who are kind of fed up with the pompous attitude that comes from a lot of the folks who so happen to reside in the Grosse Pointes. Not everybody in Grosse Pointe is a pompous asshole, but there are quite a few pompous assholes that live in the Grosse Pointes, right? So that's in that was one of the highlights of the debates. Another one of the highlights in these debates, and let me, Jesus Christ, I don't know why this keeps doing this, but another highlight was Elizabeth Warren. So Elizabeth Warren was, she was talking about what she wanted to do as far as the healthcare initiatives that she had brought forth. And Elizabeth Warren is one of the leading candidates here in the presidential in this particular presidential cycle. And she had an exchange with John Delaney about, I believe it was healthcare, and whether or not they can get certain parts of that healthcare, her healthcare plan, passed. So here's that exchange right here.
I get it. There is a lot at stake and people are scared, but we can't choose a candidate we don't believe in just because we're too scared to do anything else. And we can't ask other people to vote for a candidate we don't believe in. Democrats win when we figure out what is right and we get out there and fight for it. I am not afraid. And for Democrats to win, you can't be afraid either.
Congressman Delaney, your response.
So I think Democrats win when we run on real solutions, not impossible promises. When we run on things that are workable, not fairy tale economics. Look at the story of Detroit, this amazing city that we're in. This city is turning around because the government and the private sector are working well together.
That's not exactly what's happening here, okay? That's not exactly what's happening here. There's a lot of private money coming into downtown, a lot of private money coming into Midtown. There's a lot of gentrification happening in certain segments of the city, mainly in some of the northwest parts of the city. A lot of gentrification happening, but the boom that and the comeback that a lot of these people like to portray when it comes to Detroit, yo, is mainly happening in downtown and Midtown. And in some of these areas, a lot of black people are being pushed out. White people are moving in and raising the property values to a point where the people who used to live there can't afford to stay there anymore. But we'll let this go.
That has to be our model going forward. We need to encourage collaboration between the government, the private sector, and the nonprofit sector, and focus on those kitchen table, pocketbook issues that matter to hardworking Americans, building infrastructure, creating jobs, improving their pay,
thank you, Congressman.
Creating universal health care, lowering drug prices.
Senator
Warren.
Can do it.
You know, I don't understand why anybody goes to all the trouble of running for president of the United States just to talk about what we really can't do and shouldn't fight for.
And it was at that moment, man. It was just like. In the arms of John Delaney's candidacy died right in that moment, man. Like, he had no fucking retort. No comeback, man. He's not going to be in the next debate. It's a sad thing to happen to John Delaney. But yeah, man. Yeah. That was sad, man. That was sad. But that wasn't the only highlight of the Detroit debates, man. There was another debate that happened, or there was a couple other highlights here that I kind of wanted to talk about. Bernie Sanders, man. Of course, you guys know I'm not necessarily the biggest Bernie Sanders fan, not really a fan much at all. But there was an exchange between Bernie Sanders and Tim Ryan that I thought was like Bernie Sanders was not with the shits. Like, he was like, yo, man, he is suffering no fools, right? And so here's an exchange between Bernie Sanders and Tim Ryan about his health care plan going forward. Check this out, y'all.
Better because Medicare for All is comprehensive. It covers all health care needs for senior citizens. It will finally include dental care, hearing aids, and eyeglasses.
But you don't know.
Second
that.
Of all.
You don't know that,
second
Bernie.
Of all.
We'll come to you in a second,
I do know, and I wrote the damn bill. And second of all, many of our.
And yet another time. Tim Ryan saw his candidacy fall to the wayside. Tim Ryan will not be at the next debate. And it was a sad thing to watch. Like, how you got to take that, right? You got to stand there and take that. But like Bernie Sanders also, let me tell you something about Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders kind of comes off like Bernie Sanders, if he kind of comes across as like that old dude who will whoop your ass for like walking across his grass. But he got to keep telling you stop walking across his goddamn grass. That's Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders yells all of his answers. All the time, Bernie Sanders is yelling his answers, man. So I thought that was funny. I thought that was one of the highlights of the debate, man. I'm like, oh, shit, Bernie getting spicy with him. Bernie is suffering no fools on this one, right? So that was one of the things that happened during the debate that I wanted to highlight. Another thing that I kind of wanted to highlight during these debates, man, was, Cory Booker. Cory Booker had a particular exchange between him and Joe Biden where he tried to, fall back into his black vernacular. Here we go right here.
We have a system right now that's broken. And if you want to compare records, and frankly, I'm shocked that you do, I am happy to do that. Because all of the problems that he is talking about that he created, I actually led the bill that got passed into law that reverses the damage that your bills that you were, frankly, to correct you, Mr. Vice President, you were bragging, calling it the Biden crime bill up till 2015.
Thank you, Senator. Vice President Biden.
Number one, the bill he talks about is a bill that in our administration, we passed. We passed that bill that you added on to. That's the bill, in fact, you passed. And the fact of the matter is, secondly, there was nothing done for the entire 8 years he was mayor. There was nothing done to deal with the police department that was corrupt. Why did you announce in the first day a zero tolerance policy of stop and frisk and hire Rudy Giuliani's guy? In 2007,
you gotta kind of laugh at the fact that the way that Cory Booker is looking at him when Joe Biden is about to level this attack at him, Cory Booker is looking like, yeah, man, come on, bring it on, buddy, come on, bring it on. Like, he's got this joyous look on his face, like, yeah, man, I know where you're going with this one. I'm ready for you. But he didn't really have like a substantive answer, like a substantive. I think I'm saying that word right. Substantive. I don't know, a substantial answer for what Biden was charging, but let me go ahead and just let this play out.
Trying to get rid of the crack cocaine. Oh,
Mr. Vice President, there's a saying in my community: you're dipping into the Kool-Aid and you don't even know the flavor. You need to come to the city of Newark and see the reforms that we put in place. The New Jersey head of the ACLU has said that I embraced reforms, not just in action, but in deed. Sir.
All right. The other part that I thought was funny was like, maybe he was like sitting there with that smile on his face because he was about to load that response up. You know what I'm saying? You dip it in the Kool-Aid, don't even know the flavor. Like, he was like, man, I can't wait till I hit him with, I'm going to kill him with this one right here, boy. I'm going to kill him with this one. But really, he was just.
Whoa, brother. Now, you got too much dip on your chip.
Yeah, man. Cory Booker, man. He came out with the too much. You dip it in the Kool-Aid, don't know the flavor. He hit Joe Biden with that. Now, one of the interesting things about like this particular debate, and we're going, there's been a theme over the week, over the course of this week, especially considering how everybody was coming at Joe Biden. And because Joe Biden is the front runner, you kind of expect that he was going to get hit a lot because people are trying to take him down a peg to bring themselves up a bit. But the collateral damage of that is that in attacking Joe Biden quite a bit, they're also attacking President Barack Obama. President Barack Obama, who also just so happens to be the most popular Democrat in the nation right now, very popular president right now. Many people consider him the best president of their lifetimes. So like they take a risk of like kind of coming at Joe Biden as hard as they do, because in coming at Joe Biden, they're also taking swipes at the Obama legacy. And Obama's a pretty popular dude, you know, so it's like one of those things where like that catch 22 of damned if you do, damned if you don't. But I got to make myself known. I got to come out here and make a point because it's so many candidates. I got to separate myself from the pack. So you got a lot of that going on, right? And part of the reason why you got a lot of that going, one of the people who's also involved in that, you know, I gotta make myself known is Tulsi Gabbard. Because Tulsi Gabbard came out and she put out an attack against Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris, who attacked Joe Biden the previous debate. So we're gonna take a little bit of it. Take a look at this.
Senator Harris says she's proud of her record as a prosecutor and that she'll be a prosecutor president, but I'm deeply concerned about this record. There are too many examples to cite, but she put over 1,500 people in jail for marijuana violations and then laughed about it when she was asked if she ever smoked marijuana. She blocked evidence that would have freed an innocent man from death row until the courts forced her to do so. She kept people in prison beyond their sentences to use them as cheap labor for the state of California. And she fought to keep cash bail system in place that impacts poor people in the worst kind of way.
All right. So that exchange, or at least that attack being leveled at Kamala Harris, got a lot of applause. It got a lot of attention all over social media. It got a lot of attention on the cable news channels and whatnot. And Kamala Harris had kind of solidified her place within the top five of the presidential candidates as it stands right now after she made her attack on Joe Biden, right? And one of the things about this particular exchange that I thought was a little bit disappointing was the fact that Kamala Harris did not have a substantial response to the charges being leveled at her by Tulsi Gabbard. And I also thought that Kamala Harris should have been a bit more prepared for Tulsi Gabbard. And the reason why I say that is, after the last debate, right? After the last debate, after Kamala Harris had made waves and she talked about her own experience with busing and Joe Biden's particular position with states' rights and busing and how that could have affected her, Tulsi Gabbard went on The View. She went on CNN. She went on Fox News. And she talked about how she thought that Kamala Harris's charges against Joe Biden were misguided. She said that she thought that she kind of mischaracterized Kamala Harris's speech, as she said that like Joe Biden was racist, when Kamala Harris kind of led that statement off with, "I don't believe that you're racist." But she led, you know, Tulsi Gabbard has kind of gone around with this idea that like, yeah, she went against Joe Biden. She tried to paint Joe Biden as racist and it wasn't. It was an unfair attack, this, that, and the other. And so she basically did to Kamala Harris what she accused Kamala Harris of doing to Joe Biden, right? Now, you can go back and you can read up on whether or not the charges against Kamala Harris were, whether or not they were legitimate or accurate. But like, I'm kind of disappointed in the fact that Kamala Harris did not have a more substantial response other than, well, until you sit in the seat, you don't understand the decisions that have to be made while sitting in the seat. most people ain't really listening for that, right? As a matter of fact, the most people are going to remember about this particular exchange is the fact that, like, yo, you went on the Breakfast Club and you talked about you smoked weed and you kind of chuckled about it. And then she said that you put 1,500 people up in jail for smoking weed. Like, that's what they're going to remember. And so, like, yeah, like, there was that exchange. And so they've whittled the candidates down now for the next debate, right? And as it stands, for the next debates going forward, there's only going to be 8 candidates. So now the candidates are going to have to try to vie for not only donors, but poll numbers in order to be eligible for the next debate. And I believe there's only 8. So there's like Kamala Harris, Beto O'Rourke, which I don't understand how he's still in it, right? Real talk. Kamala Harris, Beto O'Rourke, Mayor Pete Buttigieg, Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and I'm drawing a blank on who the other two are. Sorry. But yeah, it's only going to be 8. Amy Klobuchar and maybe Cory Booker. It might be Cory Booker. But yeah, man, that's what's going on, man. And that has basically been our news, y'all. All right, now, y'all know what time it is, though. And I need to know about...
What in blue blazes is going on out here? Did this nigga just say blue blazes?
All right, our first story here in blue blazes is... So, check this out, man. We've talked about the natural phenomenon of old man strength, right? The natural phenomenon of old man strength. Like, sometimes, man, there's some old cats, man, you don't really want to run up on, man. Like, they got them, if they ain't got nothing else, they got them hands, man. They got them hands. They know how to use them. They know how to put them on somebody. And if they put them on you, you in trouble. Well, apparently there was this white man who felt like he was going to do this to this black man at the swimming pool. And he learned the hard way that was not the motherfucking move to do. So, we're going to read this story here. This comes out of rawstory.com. It says, an Oklahoma City man was knocked out twice and then arrested after harassing and attacking a black father at an apartment complex swimming pool. Joshua Valentine was accused by witnesses and police of verbally and physically assaulting a black man July 20th at the pool as he played with his children. The 28-year-old Valentine allegedly punched the other man who fought back and knocked out his assailant. Raw story is not okay. I don't give a damn about y'all Instagram. Witnesses say he swung back. Valentine awoke a few minutes later and left the pool area. Police said, but returned with a baseball bat. Witnesses say he swung the bat at the black man who fended him off with a chair and then punched him several times, knocking Valentine out a second time. Now, if anybody.
Oh, brother. Whoa. Now, you got too much dip on your chip.
If anything, he should have left out of that first knockout.
God,
like,
damn.
Like, come on, bro. What are you doing? He got his ass knocked out twice, man. You got knocked the fuck out twice. How do you get knocked the fuck out twice in the same day, bruh? Like, it's people that do this for a living. It's people that, like, fight all the time that probably ain't never been knocked out twice in the same day. Somebody need to take that man to a hospital to make sure he ain't got CTE or some shit like that. Because that dude, he's got to be suffering from some sort of, like, mental like illness or something, or some disorder or whatever. It's like, I don't know. But shout out to that black daddy for protecting his kids and not getting his ass whooped, but for handing out ass whoopings to those who were rightfully stepping up or I don't even know what to call it. That man walked up to you twice, got his ass whooped twice. He came up to you with a baseball bat, still got his ass whooped with them hands, man. Them hands. And so that's in Blue Blazes, man. Another story that's in Blue Blazes that I kind of wanted to talk about is apparently everything bad be happening up at the Walmart, man. Walmart is just not the place to go for anything pretty much anymore. I don't know the last time I even been in the Walmart. I just don't remember the last time I was in the Walmart, because, like, it's some shit popping off in the Walmart. It may be in the water in the Walmart or whatever. But there was this woman, and the police are looking for her. And the reason why they're looking for her is because she went up into a Walmart and she pissed on the potatoes up at the Walmart.
God damn!
Yeah, man. So we're going to read the story here. This comes out of the Associated Press. It says police are seeking a woman who said they say urinated on potatoes at a Walmart in Western Pennsylvania. West Mifflin police posted surveillance photos of their Twitter account. On their Twitter account, it is not known when the incident took place. A Walmart representative told WPXI-TV an employee saw that what the woman was doing. In a statement, Walmart told the station it immediately disposed of the affected products and sanitized the area. Walmart said it's working with police to find the person and have her prosecuted. The incident comes weeks after video posted on social media show people licking ice cream from freezers at Walmarts in Texas and Louisiana. So, they went from licking it to pissing it. Yeah, man. Just lock all of them the fuck up. Or you could just kind of send them away in a more permanent position. Nah, let's not do that. Let's not do that. But I'm just saying, man. I'm just sick of hearing like stories like this. This is crazy. A woman peeing on the potatoes. Peeing on the potatoes, though, man. Like, I heard them pissed on your Cheerios, man. But not peeing on your piss on your potatoes, man. That's crazy. Another story, man. And this is in Blue Blaze, but the only reason is actually kind of like a good story, man, because this kind of makes me, I'm a bit envious. And the reason why I'm envious is because I wish I was born a little time later. Like if I was born around 86, 87, 88, you know what I'm saying? Things might have been different for your man Span, man. You know, because I kind of grew up and I played video games. And I played video games quite frequently. I would wake up in the middle of the night and play video games. I remember my mama telling me, take your ass to bed, turn that goddamn Nintendo off, you know what I'm saying? Go to bed and, you know, just want to play the game though. And I remember back in the day, man, I was like, yo, playing a game, you playing that damn video games, you need to get your head in them goddamn books. Them games ain't gonna get you nowhere. And then I'm like looking at these kids now, like, I don't know. Cause there was this one kid who just won $3 million playing Fortnite in the goddamn Fortnite World Cup Championships.
God damn!
$3 million, homie. So we're going to read this story here. This comes out of CNBC, you know, the business NBC. And we're going to read this. It says, today is the day. That's what Kyle Booger Gersdorf tweeted as he walked into Arthur Ashe Stadium in New York on Sunday. A few hours later, the 16-year-old resident of Potts Grove, Pennsylvania, left with a trophy and $3 million to his name as the first Fortnite World Cup champion. That's more than what the tennis champion Novak Djokovic took home from his Wimbledon victory 2 weeks ago. He making more money than they making in Wimbledon, dog. And Wimbledon been a thing all my life. You know what I'm saying? Let's see. It also is the largest amount a single individual has won from an esports event in history. The past 2 years, Fortnite publisher Epic Games has dedicated $100 million each year for an esports prize pool, which included this week's $30 million World Cup. This is against the backdrop of Fortnite's rapid growth thanks to its Battle Royale mode. Since Fortnite's Battle Royale launched in 2017, the game has grown to 250 million players. Last year, the online video game generated $2.4 billion in revenue, according to SuperData, which made it the top-grossing free-to-play game in 2018. The game's success has also helped Epic Games reach its current $15 billion valuation. The publisher raised $1.25 billion from a group, Zymatic Gaming, in October, and Tencent currently has a 40% stake in the company. Kyle, a 10th grader, signed up to play Fortnite's Battle Royale mode shortly after his launch, drawn by how the building mechanics in the game, especially how it allow you to be creative in your own way. He then quickly involved himself in the game's competitive scene. From the very early stages, I saw the teams and a lot of the best player videos, and it made me want to grind more and get into those videos. He said, I joined competitive ladders and worked my way through. Another thing that's interesting about this esports thing, outside of just Fortnite, is that there is the market of the video game players playing these games, people watching them play these games. They put these videos up on YouTube, and then there's the ad revenue that comes from YouTube, and then there's also the sponsorships these players can get for just telling people, they're like, yo, when I play this game, I'm using this controller. Hey, when I play this game, I'm sitting in this seat. Hey, when I'm playing this game, I'm drinking this Mountain Dew. You know, like there's so many different opportunities for these kids now that we didn't necessarily have when your man Span was coming up. And I'm a little envious, man. I'm a little envious at the fact that these kids are living the fucking dream, man. If I can give up my job and just start playing motherfucking like NBA 2K or something like that, and just be an NBA 2K player making fucking $3 million a season, you think I wouldn't? Many of us 40-year-old niggas. Late 30 to early 40-year-old niggas would love this opportunity, but we got like responsibilities and jobs and 401ks and shit and health insurance to worry about. So yeah, man. But that has been Blue Blazers.
What in Blue Blazers is going on out here? Did this nigga just say Blue Blazers?
All right, but y'all know what time it is. All right, that's enough of that shit. But it's proud to be an American time, man. And the first story we got here, proud to be an American, is the fact that Candace Owens, the grifter, who most of us know, well, the Donald Trump grifter, Kanye West bandwagon jumper, talking points, memo, whatever the fuck. Like, yo, she's trying to get Cardi B to debate her to the tune of $250,000.
God damn!
Now, I know a lot of you guys may be wondering what the fuck did Candace Owens get $250,000, but, you know, that's a story for neither here nor there. But we're going to read this story here. This comes out of Newsweek.com. It says that the Trump-supporting conservative activist Candace Owens offered rapper Cardi B $250,000 to debate her or any black conservative I choose after the latter woman appeared to endorse Democratic Socialist Bernie Sanders to be president. Cardi B sat down for a conversation with Sanders, the independent U.S. Senator from Vermont, who was in the running for the Democratic Party's 2020 nomination, to ask questions sourced from her fans. She posted a picture of their meeting to her Instagram. A video is expected soon. A couple weeks ago, Cardi B had tweeted that she was reading about Sanders and felt really sad how we let him down in 2016 because of his long track record on campaigning for equality and people's rights. Owens, founder of the Blexit movement and a former communications director at a student conservative group, Turning Point USA, picked up on Cardi B's apparent support for Sanders and laid down a challenge. I see that I am Cardi B is politically advocating for Bernie Sanders with claims that Trump is bad, Owens tweeted Monday. I would like to publicly offer $250,000 to a political campaign of her choosing if she will publicly debate her stance with either myself or any black conservative I choose. Now, interestingly enough, when it comes to Candace Owens. One of the reasons why I've been calling Candace Owens a grifter was because it was just 3 years ago that Candace Owens herself was anti-Trump. That Candace Owens herself was running an anti-Trump blog before she found out that, yo, I could actually make some money. I can make some money by being a pro-Trump black person. Because pro-Trump black people, this is their time to cash in. If you're willing to kind of sell your soul and whatnot and, like, you know, do that whole coon extravaganza thing. And y'all know, like, I very seldom, very, very, very seldom like to call black people coons. But, yo, man, like, she kind of fits that bill, right? So, Candace Owens herself is one of those people who not even 3 years ago was anti-Trump. And once she found out that she can make some money to do this, she went all in with this. The other interesting thing about this is the fact that, yo, as much as we love Cardi B, we also don't necessarily look at Cardi B as like she's some political, like a political wonk, right? She's not going to have all of the answers when it comes to immigration. She's not going to have all of the answers when it comes to the healthcare crisis. She's not going to have all of the answers when it comes to domestic and foreign policy. She's just not that versed in it, but she's showing an interest in the political in a political thing, right? And so Candace Owens is looking at this as an opportunity to make a fool of, or she thinks that Cardi B is easy pickings. So if I can go at this popular, well-known rapper and make her look foolish, then therefore I can not only elevate myself because Cardi B has much more cachet, much more, many more fans than I do. I can up my cachet and I can also endear myself to these other white people who may not necessarily like the fact that Cardi B is like as free as she is as a woman, as free as she is as a woman of color, as free as she is sexually, as free as she is as an artist. If I can make her look foolish, then therefore I burnish my credentials with the people whom I'm trying to sell this idea that I'm on their side with a lot of this bullshit that I'm talking, right? And so that's what the game is when it comes to Candace Owens. Because Candace Owens, the minute that Kanye West said that he likes the way that Candace Owens thinks, Candace Owens, you saw her every motherfucking where with Kanye West. She went to TMZ with Kanye West. She started telling people that Kanye West was designing the logos and the T-shirts and shit for her little Blexit thing. Never mind the fact that Blexit was something entirely different, not even associated with Candace Owens, right? But Candace Owens has like tried to ingratiate herself in that way. And she's hustling the entire time. Like, I had an exchange with a Trump supporter earlier this week. I know y'all are like, yo, Spam, man, why do you even bother? But I had an exchange with a Trump supporter earlier this week. And, of course, like I'm saying, like, you know, Trump supporters, racist, Klan sympathizers, the whole nine. And it was a Trump supporter who was like, well, Candace Owens, you know, he started sending me all these Candace Owens videos. And I'm just like, yo, Candace Owens just 3 years ago didn't like your boy either. Like, the reason why Candace Owens sees race as a business is because Candace Owens is making money off of the fact that she knows if she says these things that you like, then you will therefore use her as cover, keep paying her to retort against people like me and other black people so that you don't necessarily have to listen to all these other black people who are saying Donald Trump is racist. No, you ain't got to listen to them because I got Candace Owens who says he ain't racist. And I'm going to listen to her because I agree that Trump ain't racist. And because I agree that Trump ain't racist, that means I ain't racist. And therefore, what you're talking about is bullshit. That is why Candace Owens is a thing. That is why she's a thing. And that's exactly why she's trying to latch herself on to Cardi B, is because, yo, Cardi B is a star and she wants to be, she wants to say she can take down a peg on a star. But why aren't you challenging somebody like Bakari Sellers or Angela Rye or fucking Roland Martin or somebody like that? Why aren't you challenging those people to a debate for $250,000? Why are you coming at this rapper? Right? Because you think, that Cardi B is easy pickings. And that's in Proud to Be an American Man. The other story that I got here in Proud to Be an American Man is this story here, man. It honestly, I'm surprised that it's such a big story, right? I'm surprised it's a big story because black people know this, have always known this, always. And what we've known is that Ronald Reagan is a goddamn racist, right? We've always known this. But apparently, white people, especially conservatives, are shocked. They're like, hold on.
Whoa, brother, now. You got too much dip on your chip.
They like, man, you lying. Not Ronnie Reagan. Not Ronnie Reagan. No, man, that's my guy, man. He is the patron saint. Ronald Reagan is the patron saint of modern conservatism. And I would not allow for you to besmirch his character in this way. Because Ronald Reagan did more for America than any other president has ever done for him. Ronald Reagan may go down as one of the greatest presidents of all time, if you ask me. One of the greatest presidents of all time. He got Gorbachev to tear down the wall. You know what I'm saying? He got rid of the welfare queens. He got us out of the recession that Jimmy Carter had put us in. Ronald Reagan is great. That's how they feel. And then when you start talking about how his policies disproportionately affected communities of color in disproportionate and negative ways, suddenly those charts are like, oh, you're getting out over your skis there, buddy. Getting out over your skis. And so what they didn't know was that the other racist president that used to be in that White House, Richard Nixon used to record all of his phone conversations. And Ronald Reagan was on those damn phone conversations. As a matter of fact, right now, I know the ghost of Ronald Reagan is probably squabbing with the motherfucking ghost of of Richard Nixon, and he like, man, you should have
delete all that shit.
I'm saying, man, he trying to get him to delete all that shit. So we're going to read this story. As a matter of fact, now we're not going to read this shit. We're going to listen to Ronald Reagan talking greasy about black folks, man. Check this out, y'all.
Last night, I tell you, to watch that thing on television that I did.
Yeah.
To see those monkeys from those African countries. Damn them, they're still uncomfortable wearing shoes.
Okay, so it may sound a little bit like kind of grainy, but apparently there was a resolution before the United Nations about whether or not they should recognize China into the United Nations. And some African countries had voted in favor of that particular resolution. And this call was about Ronald Reagan being pissed at the fact that these African nations had voted for this particular resolution. And he said that these monkeys were dancing around. It looked like they were, you know, just now getting used to wearing shoes. These monkeys from these African nations, they looked as if they were just now getting used to wearing shoes. Now, Nixon didn't admonish him. Nixon just kind of chuckled at this particular shit. Now, again, this is 1971. Racism was a bit more palatable to white folks back then. Even they were fresh, you know, like fresh from like the 60s, the late 60s and the civil rights movement and everything. So this is something that, like, although like this is when white folks were like, oh, we're gonna be racist, but we can't be outwardly racist, right? This is where it was like fresh, when they couldn't be necessarily outwardly racist, and they're having these conversations, but you know, they didn't necessarily just like verbalize this politically. This is something that they kept private.
Well, and then the tail wags the dog there, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The tail wags the dog. I, for example, just had a call from Reagan, California, and, you know, he's been out there and so forth, and as you can imagine, there's strong feeling that we just shouldn't, as he said, he saw these, as he said, these cannibals on television last night, and he said they weren't even wearing shoes, and he says here the United States is going to submit its fate to that, and so forth and so on, and you know, but that's typical of a reaction, which is probably quite strong.
Yeah, but that's so. Here's the other part, and I've been saying this for like a while, when it comes to like black Republicans and black conservatives and whatnot. And I was having a conversation earlier today with my father-in-law. We were just kind of talking about why, like even to like today, like why there is a such thing as a black Republican, considering, you know, the ways in which the Republican Party has messaged a lot of their politics regarding black people. And there's a couple different things when it comes to black Republicans. There's a couple different ways I see them. You got the black Republicans who see themselves as not like those other Negroes. And those Republicans or those conservative black folks, when the charges of racism are being leveled at people like Donald Trump, when the charges of racism or bigotry is being leveled at someone like a Ronald Reagan, or like when those charges are coming at them from people of color, the first thing they separate themselves from the people of color, at least when it comes to the black Republicans or black conservatives. A lot of times they try to separate themselves from people of color or other black people. And so when politicians like a Donald Trump, when politicians like a Ronald Reagan say things negatively about the black community, there's a segment of the population who will say, well, they talking about those niggas over there. They ain't talking about me. They don't necessarily associate themselves with the message that that Reagan and Trump or these people or Nixon, they don't necessarily associate themselves in that way. So they kind of separate themselves from that. So when these charges come up, this is how you get somebody on television, even today, a black person like a Paris Denard or shit, he's the first one that kind of comes to mind, but it's like a few of them, man. I can't I don't know, Diamond and Silk, you know, these sorts of Negroes who get on television and they openly and overtly just kind of, you know, campaign for these openly racist people. And it's again that thing where it gives them cover. It gives them cover to say, well, at least I got these black people over here. And if these black people over here believe that what I'm saying isn't racist, therefore, I don't have to acknowledge the rest of you niggas who think that what I'm saying is racist, despite the fact that there's more y'all niggas over there than I got over here in my camp. Right. So there's that. The other part is there are some. They're very few and far in between. But there are some who have problems with the fact that the modern Republican Party is so overtly racist. They aren't necessarily as vocal as the other ones who believe that they are separated somehow from the chart, from racism and where the racism is being directed. They don't necessarily feel that way. And those are the kind of people who move away from the Republican Party or the conservative movement, so to speak. We saw one Republican House of Representative member decide to retire. He was like, yo, I can't do this anymore. And like they genuinely believe in like fiscal conservatism and some of the more Christian and social conservative ideals. And although I don't necessarily agree with them on a lot of those particular issues, they don't necessarily separate themselves from blackness. And, you know, that there's that thing. So they don't necessarily cover for the racism that's going on within their party. They're like, yeah, that's going on. It's some bullshit. I don't like it. But they to some degree, they've been willing to stomach quite a bit, more than most people would be, right? And so you got those two particular people, black conservatives within the Republican movement. But the thing when it comes to, like, racism, because I've been, like, we've been having these conversations. They've been, like, plentiful since Donald Trump came out against, the squad, and he made his comments about Baltimore and everything. And one of the things that I like when it comes to racism, and you got a lot of people who are like a lot of white people, a lot of Trump supporters who are bristling at being called racist. Nobody likes to be called racist. All of this racist shit is going on, but nobody wants to actually own up to the racism. You know what I'm saying? It's like, who broke my lamp? You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody in the house, like, only three of you motherfuckers is in the house when the lamp got broke, but ain't nobody owning up to it. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like that shit. But, yeah, man, it's like, you got these people, like, they don't want to be called racist, but they're supporting racist policies. They're supporting racist rhetoric. They're supporting racist propaganda, but they don't necessarily see themselves as racist. And then you find yourself in this circular argument with these people. And most of the time you're just basically arguing over semantics, but the racism is there. And it's always been there. That's the other key part about it. It's always kind of been there. Like, you think about to, like, when people talk about, like, I talk about Reagan, I'm talking about Reagan now, because Reagan, they, like, Republicans now elevate Reagan as though Reagan was like this patron saint. Like, when you think about modern day conservatism, supposedly Reagan is the model. Reagan is the one that they, like, you know, they hold up and it's like, this is what we were striving to be like. Right. And so, you think about, the Linda Taylor story, where he basically extrapolated that story to talk about welfare queens and, people being on SNAP benefits and food stamps or whatever, and how they were supposedly, you know, scamming the system. You know, so we got to do something about welfare. We can't let these people be on welfare, right? You think about how the war on drugs started with Nixon, but how it was even more of a thing, like with the Iran-Contra affair, and how they were actually, like, the CIA was actually bringing drugs within the to the inner cities and selling those drugs in the inner cities so that they could fund weapons to the Sandinistas in the Nicaraguan civil war that was going on during the Iran-Contra affair. Like, that was two separate things. I'm sorry. Those are two separate things. But you think about things like that, right? You think about the fact that Ronald Reagan was against the creation of Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday being celebrated as a national holiday. You think about the fact that, and when Ronald Reagan was the governor of the state of California, where the Black Panthers came to the state capitol and they had their firearms with them, and suddenly the Republicans became a party of gun control because they were like, yo, these niggas came up to the state capitol with guns. Okay, clink, clink. It's now illegal for you to have a long gun out in public that's loaded. Before, it was the law that you were allowed to do that. Now you can't do that anymore. And it's funny, when we start talking, when we talk, and the NRA was also about that too, is one of the things that kind of turned me against being an NRA member. When I found that out, when I actually read the history about how that came to be, I was like, yo, okay. And I just renounced my membership in the NRA. And it's funny because they'll still send me fucking mailings and shit, asking me to come back, asking me for money. The NRA is in total fucking shambles right now. But yeah, man. So like Ronald Reagan, when they start telling you like we need to get back to being a Reagan Republican and all this other shit and the silent majority and everything, like it's a call back to a time where they were like kind of covert with the racism, I guess. You know what I'm saying? And even Donald Trump's usage of the term, you know, the phrase "Make America Great Again" isn't original. It's a Ronald Reagan slogan. Ronald Reagan, black people have known Ronald Reagan has been as a racist for quite some time, man. We are we have known Donald Trump to be a racist. We tried to tell the world this before America elected his bitch ass, right? So this doesn't surprise me that Ronald Reagan would be considered a racist. And that he would be saying some off-color shit, some real racist, fucked up shit about black people while on the phone when he thinking ain't nobody else listening. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't surprise me whatsoever. It's a whole lot of old white men, whole lot of old white men who probably talk about this all the time, who talk like this all the time when it concerns black people. And I am under no illusions when it comes to like dealing with old white men, that they may have that same motherfucking attitude about me, that I'm just a monkey who's occupying a space. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, man, that has been proud to be an American. And, yeah. Actually, that's not it. Shit, that's not it. There's another story that I kind of want to highlight here in Proud to Be an American, man. There's another story. So this actually comes out of North Carolina, and we're going to get this story out of CBSNews.com because there's apparently a gun store in North Carolina that were using pictures of the squad to sell guns in that state. All right, so we're going to read the story here. This comes out of CBSNews.com. It says an advertising company has announced it will take down a billboard in Murphy, North Carolina, calling Representatives Ilhan Omar, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, and Ayanna Pressley idiots. And the billboard was promoting a local gun shop. And the shop owner said he wants to go to court to keep it up. The billboard received national attention after Cherokee Guns posted a picture of it on Facebook. Cherokee Guns stood by his ad and even sold bumper stickers of it for those who wanted to show support. However, others found the image, which is signed the deplorables, as offensive. The congresswomen on the billboard were the subject of a barrage of racist tweets by President Trump. The president tweeted earlier this month that the progressive Democratic congresswomen should go back to where they came from, even though three of them were born in the U.S. and the fourth has been a citizen for two decades. Since then, they've been singled out repeatedly by opponents on the right. Allison Outdoor Advertising wrote on Facebook about his decision to take down the billboard, according to WTVC-TV. However, that post has been removed. CBS News reached out to the company for details. On Tuesday, the owner of Cherokee Guns spoke to WTVC. He said the billboard had only been up for a few days, but it had already brought him more business. CBS News has reached out to Cherokee Guns for comment. The next day, Allison Outdoor Advertising announced the advertisement was coming down. And yeah, so here's the thing. I cannot say I'm surprised that they would want this particular ad up, or at least the gun shop they're going to try to fight to keep this up. And the reason why I say that I'm not surprised at that is because Donald Trump has been somewhat successful in trying to paint these women as the boogeyman, right? They're like, when it comes to Republicans and when it comes to guns and Republicans, they need a boogeyman. And for 8 years, they had that boogeyman in Barack Obama. Barack Obama, like, they had the thought that your guns were going to be taken away from you, right? And not only that, when it came to Hillary Clinton, too, they had the idea that your guns were going to be taken away from you. And one of the things about Republicans is that a lot of times, man, you got a lot of single-issue voters over there, and they will fall in line over there. When it comes to the Supreme Court, they will fall in line over there. When it comes to abortion, they will fall in line over there, right? And so with Barack Obama was the president of the United States, they had the boogeyman that they needed. They had a black man in a position of power, and he was even if he asks for reasonable gun control measures like a background check, which 90% of most, you know, NRA members would even support, when it comes to closing the gun show loopholes and everything. They were against all of that. They're like, yo, this nigga is coming for our guns, man. And not only that, like, gun sales were through the roof. Gun prices were through the roof. Ammo was through the roof. I know because I own guns and I was trying to buy shit, right? The shit was through the roof. You try to go buy an AR-15 that was normally $500 and you looked up and that bitch was $2,100 around that time. I can remember when Sandy Hook happened. When Sandy Hook happened, gun prices shot the fuck up because everybody was going out to go try to buy up some stuff because they thought that the government was going to finally crack down and they were going to take certain weapons off of the shelves. AR-15s being one of them. AK-47s probably being another. So like you had this whole push of they're coming after your guns, they're coming after your Second Amendment rights and everything else, right? And since Barack Obama has no longer been president of the United States, gun sales have been plummeting in the United States. As a matter of fact, we got this story here. This comes out of the conservative Washington Times. Let me go ahead and pull this up because it's interesting that even the Washington Times could recognize that they don't necessarily have the boogeyman that they once did. It says the Trump slump. This is what they're calling it. The Trump slump in the gun market is only getting deeper. According to the latest numbers from the several analysts, that show last month was the weakest October for sales in 7 years. Analysts both inside and outside the industry say firearms enthusiasts are no longer spurred to buy because of fears of a gun crackdown. The major contributing factor, they said, to a massive surge in sales during the Obama administration. With President Trump in office, even renewed media attention to gun control in the wake of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School shooting in February has not seen enough to scare gun owners into stocking up. That fear dissipated with Mr. Trump being elected. Hence, a big fall in 2017, and it's a continuation of that fall, said Jurgen Brauer, the chief economist at Small Arms Analytics and Forecasting, a research firm. Robert Spitzer, a professor at Southern University of New York, Cortland, who has written extensively about the politics of gun control, also suspect longer-term demographic trends at play in the sluggish sales. The largest gun-owning segment by far is declining gradually and is not being replaced, which is older white males. Whatever the reasons, the results are clear. Mr. Brower's group figures that there were slightly more than 1 million firearm sales in the U.S. in October, a 12% decline from October 2017. And through the first 10 months of the year, there have been 10.8 million firearms sold, down from 11.4 million over the same period last year and 12.9 million in 2016. So they need to come up with new boogeymen. And because Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, Ayanna Pressley, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez are very vocal, very adamant, and forcefully coming out against this president. If they could figure out a way to try to peg them as somehow coming for your guns, they absolutely will if they can get these old white men scared enough to go out and go buy some old shit, to compound the shit that they already got. But, yeah, man, that has been Proud to Be an American. All right, but y'all know what time it is.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
All right, our ass hat of the week this week here at the Spam Report Podcast is none other than the Federal Trade Commission, man. And my father-in-law picked this one, man. Shout out to my dad, Roscoe. He picked the ass hat of the week this week. And we talked a little bit about this earlier today because I had somebody else who I was considering. But no, the FTC earned it this week. And the reason why the FTC earned their ass hat of the week this week is because of this, man. There's video. So let me pull this video up so you guys can watch this and we can just kind of all listen along here. Let's do that. All right, here we go. Check this out, y'all. Ah, man, it's one of those videos where you gotta like read it and shit. Okay, we're not gonna do that. with the music and reading and whatnot. So here's the story, though. So let me read this here. It says, if you filed a claim to receive $125 payout from Equifax as part of its settlement with the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC has bad news for you. It's likely that no one will be getting $125. Last week, the FTC announced that it had reached a settlement with Equifax over the credit reporting company's 2017 data breach that resulted in 147 million people's sensitive information being stolen. Part of that settlement stipulated that Equifax would have to pay at least $575 million and up to $700 million in restitution, $31 million of which would be allocated for alternative cash payments to those affected by the breach. When the FTC originally made the announcement, it wasn't anticipating the overwhelming public response to that occurrence since. Millions of people have already visited the site, the claim site, and it's only been a week. Because so many people filed claims for benefits and opted for the cash option, the payment will be much lower than originally expected. Each person who takes the money option is going to get a very small amount, the FTC warned. Nowhere near the $125 they could have gotten if there hadn't been such an enormous number of claims filed. That's bullshit. That is utter bullshit. And the reason why I say it's bullshit is because, yo, you made a settlement, right? For $575 million to $700 million. And you only allocated $31 million to the people who were actually affected by that particular data breach. Because in order for you to get the monies that you were supposedly allotted, even if it was just $125, in order for you to get that, you have to prove that you'd have to go to their site, find out whether or not you were affected. If you were affected, then you could go ahead and file a claim. If you weren't affected, you wasn't going to get shit. But apparently, y'all wasn't expecting the people who were affected by this to go ahead and file a claim. And even with that knowledge, you only allotted $30 million to over 100 million some odd people who were affected. I think it was 125 million people who were affected by this data breach. And y'all only allotted $30 million? That's bullshit. And why is the FTC getting all of the money? It wasn't the FTC's money or the FTC's information that was hacked. It was the people like you and me. My shit was hacked. Your shit was hacked. I'm getting fucking text messages from people. I'm getting text messages from phone numbers. I'm like, man, how in the fuck they get this number? And then they get slick with shit. Like, I get text messages and I'll block the text message from that number, right? So what they will do is this. Now, they will add me in a group text, right? They'll add me to a group text. And I can't block the group text. I just have to delete the group text to keep me from deleting a lot of the shit coming my way, or to keep me from blocking a lot of the shit that's coming my way because my information was compromised in this particular data breach. So, yeah, man, the FTC, man, fuck y'all. Fuck y'all for being able to, like, just kind of, you know, usurp and swoop in. I mean, I know y'all supposed to be fighting for us, but I can't really tell if y'all getting more of the money than I'm getting. And I was the motherfucker affected by the shit. So, yeah, man. The FTC is the ass hat of the week this week here at the Spin Report Podcast.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
But we do have a champ.
The champ is here. 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 The champ is here.
All right, here we are, the champ of the week, and this week our champ is Jamal Lewis. And this is not the Jamal Lewis that used to be the running back for the Baltimore Ravens. No, this is not that guy. But, yo, Jamal Lewis is actually a young man in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And apparently Jamal Lewis made it a thing. He made the news, man, and the reason why he made the news is because he came out with a T-shirt line.
President Trump's criticism of...
Okay, he came out with a T-shirt line that basically said, make racism wrong again. in a play against the Make America Great Again hats and t-shirts that Donald Trump is selling. So we're going to read this story here. This comes out of CBSPittsburgh.com. It says a Western Pennsylvania man is going viral for wearing Make Racism Wrong Again to a local Walmart store. It always happens at the Walmart, right? Jamal Lewis lives in Jonestown, and his Facebook post has now been shared hundreds of times. In the photo, Lewis is wearing a Make Racism Wrong Again hat and t-shirt. He said he wore the clothes to a local Walmart store and received so many dirty looks. Anyone who knows me knows that I lived in a few different places, and I've traveled all over the country and outside the country. I'm not saying there's not good people here, but because there are, but there's a lot of there's a large amount of open in your face racism here, Lewis posted. So yeah, man, I know it's a low bar this week. I know it's a low bar this week, but you know, it's been a struggle like to find some good news and shit like that. And so as much as I would like a shirt myself, yo, Jamal Lewis is the champ of the week this week here at the Spirit Portal Podcast, man. Real talk. Now, programming note. We will not have a Span Report podcast next weekend, next Saturday, because your man Span will be on vacation. So there will not be a Span Report podcast episode next Saturday. Or Beer and Chicken, because I'll be out on vacation. So we will be coming back the week after next. But I will talk to you guys again soon. And until next time, fam, peace.